Thank you for hanging in with me this evening. My guest, Bruce Van Natta, crushed underneath a semi-truck and was at the very verge of life and death when he had an out-of-body experience. During this near-death time, he saw what he believes were two angels sent to save his life. Bruce is the only person doctors can find who have ever lived from some of the injuries that he suffered. After his experience, Bruce wrote the book Saved by Angels. The story has garnered international attention recently, leading to Bruce's appearing on such programs as Sid Roth's It's Supernatural TV and radio shows. When we return, we'll hear this most fascinating tale and truly a case of a miracle right here on Earth. That takes place next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for tuning into the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Bruce Van Natta, our guest for the remainder of the show. We'll open up phone lines in the last hour of the show. If you have questions, concerns, want to talk about your own angelic encounters or miracles in your own lives, we'll talk to you then. Right now, we're going to hear about one of the most amazing cases of miracles and healings I've ever heard in my life. Bruce, walk me through this day. Start it off with what led you to this place and put you in this predicament.
Well, I owned my own business, and I traveled around and did on-site diesel repair here in the state of Wisconsin where I live. And that particular day, November 16th, 2006, very, very cold day here in Wisconsin, I was working on a Peterbilt logging truck about an hour south of my home. I'd left my house that morning, 6 a.m. I was called in because this engine on this truck had a coolant leak. And so I was working with the guy who was the driver slash part-time mechanic, who he worked for that logging company. We started the job on Tuesday. By Thursday, I got the engine fixed. It was no longer leaking coolant. In order to test my repair, we're just running it. I'm putting my tools away, just getting ready to leave from this place. And that's when the guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, there's just one more thing I'd like you to take a look at." And at that point, I'm thinking, I'm, you know, minutes from walking out the door. Mm-hmm. And I look up at the clock. It was 6:10 p.m. when he tapped on my shoulder. And I was thinking, I'd left my house at 6 a.m. And it's already been a 12-hour day. It's going to be 13 hours by the time I get home. And, you know, I was just thinking about getting home and having a shower and getting some warm to eat on a cold day.
All right, so one last thing to look at, one last thing to do, and then you can head home. What happens now?
So if anybody listening tonight, if they've never looked underneath one of these great big semi-trucks, this big Peterbilt logging truck is as big of a semi-truck as you're ever going to see on the road. If you were to get on your knees and look, you know, from the front of the truck, looking towards the back of the truck, the big chrome bumper that's in the front, if you were to, like, get on your knees and look underneath that, you would see the lowest thing on the ground is the front axle. And the reason why is it's a dropped axle on these big trucks. All that means is where the axle comes out of the front wheels, it just drops down on both sides. So a smaller statured guy like me is just barely able to roll on a creeper underneath one of these front axles. So, you know, there's not much space between the bottom of this axle and the cement or blacktop, whatever it's on. And that front axle on this truck, where the two front tires are touching the ground, has 5 to 6 tons of weight, empty. So 10,000, 12,000 pounds of weight just on the two front tires. The guy I was working with had jacked up that axle on the passenger side in order to remove the passenger side front wheel. So the front wheel's off. Now it's Thursday night. He's going to come back Friday morning. He's going to put the wheel back on. He's going to put the air cleaner back on, all the stuff that he could handle. I just had to get the technical stuff done. So that's when, you know, the engine is itself back together, running. I'm about to leave. He says, "Hey, look at one more thing." I said, "What is it?" So this big Caterpillar engine, Cat engines are yellow. And so there's this big dirty spot in the engine. He said he can wipe it off, and within about 2 weeks of running, this got a dirty spot again. And he said, so he knows it's seeping oil out of somewhere, you know, on the dirt attracts to it, whatever. And he said it just drove him crazy. Could I figure out where the oil's seeping out? We'll diagnose it, you know, order the parts, come back, fix it a later day. I said, sure. I said, where is it? He said, front of the engine, towards the bottom. So I get on his creeper. Now, creeper, just a little tool the mechanics use to slide underneath vehicles. So you lay on it or get on your belly, whatever. I laid on this thing on my back. I just am barely able to slip underneath the front bumper, feet first. If you can picture it, my feet are going towards the back of the truck. So I'm crawling underneath the front bumper, you know, on my back, rolling underneath this on this creeper. Now, a side note, this creeper was kind of a do-it-yourselfer, not professional grade, cheap plastic, hollow core creeper, which plays a real important part in the story. And so I get on his creeper, I start going underneath, and I stopped and I said to Leonard, hey, jump up inside the cab, see if because the engine's running at this point. And I said, if it's up to like 180 degrees or so, just shut it off. So if you can picture it, this axle is jacked up on the passenger side, the wheels removed. He had not used any safety equipment, no jack stands, no block of any kind. And I saw that, and I should have known better than to go underneath that truck without any safety equipment. But, I mean, you know, literally I thought it's just going to take me a minute or two to see what the problem is, I'll be out of here. And I just didn't, you know, I didn't worry about it. So I just lay on the creeper, I slip underneath there, and I pull myself underneath. And where I stopped, that axle is going from the left to the right, obviously. And where I stopped, it was right above my belly button and just maybe an inch above me. So there's maybe only like an inch of space between the bottom of that axle and my belly. So I'm just barely able to fit underneath it. It's being held up by this bottle jack on the passenger side. I'm looking at the bottom of the running engine. Leonard gets in the truck. The truck kind of shifts and rocks. And at that point, I saw movement in the peripheral vision of my left eye. And I turned my head in time, just in time, to see that jack that is supposed to be holding up that axle wiggle, and it just shot out of there like a rocket. That axle comes down across my midsection, hits the cement. I mean, it drops that, you know, hover, you know, 10 inches or whatever it was, comes down and hits the cement. I mean, this crazy loud kabang when this, you know, 5 to 6 tons of weight hits the cement. And it just acted like a blunt guillotine and crushed my body in half across the middle. If you could picture taking a tube of toothpaste, taking the cap off and like laying it on the floor of your bathroom and like stepping in the middle of it, you know, the toothpaste is going to squirt out the end, right? Well, that's exactly what happened. When this thing fell on me, literally blood shot out from the inside of my body, out of my mouth instantaneously when the truck fell on me. And it just had one blob about half the size of a golf ball, and it just stopped. And so, I mean, I'm just crushed in half. And at that point, I called out to God and I just said, Lord Jesus, help me. I remember saying it twice. For whatever reason, I don't know, but I said it twice. And at that point, I looked down, and this is what I saw. There was about an inch of airspace between the bottom of the axle and the cement on my left side. So I know that my body is about an inch thick. That junky plastic hollow core creeper had just crushed to nothing, like eighth inch thick, flat, middle flat. And on the right side of my body, it's about double. It's about 2 inches of space because the right side, as I'm laying on my back underneath it, the driver's side wheel is still on the axle, so that axle is going up at an angle towards the driver's side. So literally, I'm crushed in half across the middle.
Now, I've got to ask. I mean, we've heard cases where traumatic injuries happen like this, and it seems the body goes into its own self-protective mode, and some people that have had traumatic injuries will be aware and conscious of what's going on, but they have no feeling, no sense. Were you feeling what had happened to you?
The pain that I felt, Dave, was insane. I raced motorcycles for 10 years, and you know, I traveled on the Midwest racing motorcycles in the whole Midwest. I had multiple, you know, accidents and got hurt, and I never, ever, ever experienced anything even close to this kind of pain. It was on a scale of 1 to 10, it was like 100. I didn't know it, but what the doctors told me later is all your internal organs and everything also have you know, pain. You know, nerves that can transmit pain. So it's not just like when you poke your finger in or smash your hand with a hammer or something where you could feel pain like that just there. It happens on the inside too. So everything inside of me is crushed, spleen, pancreas, intestines. My back was broken. I mean, literally, I'm thinner than my spine in the middle of my body. Those two vertebrae that the axle were directly above were broken. So, I mean, I'm flat across the middle.
Okay, you're in this situation. I mean, this almost sounds like the movie Signs with Mel Gibson when his wife, spoiler alert, is crushed between a car and a tree, and it's basically cut her in half. It's just the truck being there is what's keeping her in one piece. Are you, I mean, I know you call out for help at this point, but are you conscious of your mortality at that moment? Do you think this is it? I'm about to die?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it didn't totally hit me until, so what happened next, the guy gets down to the truck and he looks underneath there. And from the point of view underneath the front bumper, looking towards the back of the truck, right? And what all we can see is this big axle that has fallen through me, and we can't see like the lower half of my body. We just see the top half. I mean, it looks like, you know, some stupid magician's trick. And he just stops and goes into shock. And I'm looking back at him, and I start begging him, call 911, because I'm afraid. I mean, I'm freaking out. I'm saying, call 911. And at that point, the engine is still running. I can hear him screaming on the phone. You know, once he shakes, it seemed like forever. I mean, I'm saying call 911. It seemed like forever, but I'm sure it was just seconds. He goes to the phone. He's yelling. I remember him saying, you know, truck fell on a guy. He's crushed in half. You know, send people quick. He gets back down. This engine is still running. Now it's just, you know, just right above my head. The engine is directly right above me. And because it's got my vertebrae broken, it's got me pinched down to the cement. And this big diesel engine is, you know, they vibrate. And when it's running, it feels like it's sawing me in half. I mean, it literally felt like, because it just is running and vibrating, it accentuated the pain, and it was just like unbearable. And so I'm saying, shut it off, please. I'm begging him to shut it off. He jumps up in the truck, which was why he went up there in the first place. He shuts the engine off, gets down. It just lessened the pain just, you know, a little bit, but it did make it a little bit better. And he goes and he's looking for the jack. The jack had flown up like a rocket, gets stuck in the wall. It came out so hard. He pulls the jack out of the wall.
The jack is stuck in the wall?
Yeah, it flew out so hard. I mean, you figure, you know, 5 to 6 tons of weight, and this jack shoots out. I mean, it was stuck in a steel wall, tin wall. I mean, it blew right out. So he gets it out, and he's trying to figure out how to jack the truck up off of me. But the axle that he had jacked up underneath is now on the cement, so he can't put that jack back underneath the axle anymore because it's touching the ground. So he's looking around. I'm pinned underneath the truck looking at him, and he's frantic. And the only place he could put the jack was underneath the big curved leaf spring that's attached to that axle. So I watch him. He slides it up to it. Well, he starts jacking up, and I start begging him, please, you know, don't jack it up there because it's on a curve. You know, you don't want to jack something up, especially with all the weight on an angle, because I know the jack is just going to slip. So I'm saying,
if this truck, I mean, if it's pinning you and holding you, it's probably keeping arteries and everything pinched so that they're not just, you're not bleeding out at that particular
Absolutely.
Moment. By releasing that pressure off you, that could just start all kinds of new trouble.
Absolutely. That's what it was. In fact, I speak in New York several times a year, a couple times a year, and I was in New York City and I spoke with some firefighters from New York City, and they said that when people get run over by subway cars, if they're pinned underneath them in the same fashion like I was, if they're conscious, they ask them if they have a cell phone that they could call and talk to a family member, and what they're doing is letting them say goodbye. And they'll, you know, get somebody on the phone, because they said as soon as they jack it off of them, the people then free bleed and die, and which is exactly what happened to me. So that, you're right. When it's on you and it's got all that stuff pinched off, you don't free bleed. But as soon as they take the weight off, that's when you free bleed.
So there's got to be this new sense. Now you realize you're probably dying. You've got 10 to 12,000 pounds on you, and this guy starts to jack the truck up off of you, and it's on a curve on an angle.
Right. Right.
And you're telling him, hold on a second here. But he's just thinking, I got to get this guy out from underneath this truck.
Right, exactly. So it did. The jack did slip a little bit. It wasn't what I expected. It did slip a little bit, but it stopped. And the reason why it stopped is there's a big bolt or rivet holding those multiple leaves of that stacked leaf spring together on each end. Well, where the head of that jack, which is about the size of a silver dollar, caught that bolt of that river, whatever it was, and it stopped there. He was unable to jack it up off me. And when he got it up off me and I looked down at my body, my work uniform, if you can just picture this, my work uniform went to the edge of my ribs, normal, but then all of a sudden it went down, like directly, you know, perpendicular with my spine, then went parallel along my spine, and then came back up at my pelvic. So I was flat all the way across the middle, 1 inch thick on the left, 2 inches thick on the right. And when I saw that, it looked so surreal. It was cartoonish. And that's the only thing I could think of. This looks like something out of a cartoon. And you know, I've said that to people before, and they say, oh, I mean, you're crushed in half, and you're thinking about cartoons. Yeah, that's the only thing I could think
of. Sure.
That's what it
looked
like.
The Wile E. Coyote cartoons where he gets run over and his body's all fine on top and bottom, and then there's that one-foot section that's flat with the trailer mark over it. You've got to be looking at that. Are you feeling... And could you still feel your legs and move any part of you at that point?
You know,
or were you
I wasn't moving except my arms, but it was
okay.
So much, Dave. The pain was so insane.
Oh, I guess.
It was just crazy. And I'm looking at myself, and that, back to your original question, when I saw myself flat across the middle, and now I could see both halves of my body with the flat spot, that was the point where I'm like, oh, crap, this is it. I am dead. I'm going to die. There's no way I'll be able to live from this. And that was the moment. That was the point when I could see my whole body, and I'm flat across the middle. Because it was ridiculous. I mean, you're looking at yourself, and you're thinking, there's no way I should be able to look at my body and have it look like this and still be alive. You know, that was the exact thought. I'm dead.
What is this guy doing once he's got it up to the certain point and can't jack it any higher? What is he? Is he apologizing to you? Is he calling out to God? Is he?
Point, I start freaking out.
Sure.
And I'm saying, you know, get me out from underneath this truck. I was panicking, completely going to shock. And I'm saying, I'm begging him, please get me out from underneath this truck. And at this point, it's not like I can yell. I'm like half a mumble, you know. And I'm just begging him, please get me out from underneath the truck. And he won't touch me. Most people have been told you don't want to, you know, move, wiggle somebody with a back injury. I'm ridiculously flat across the middle. He knows I have to have a broken back. He's not going to touch me. So he says, look, you know, I called 911. They're coming. It's okay. You know, he's trying to calm me down a little bit. I'm panicking. I reach back, and I could just grab the bottom of that chrome bumper that's back behind my head. And the creeper is flat. It's crushed. It's touching the cement. It's flat across the middle. But on each end, it's still got the little wheels on the top and on the bottom that didn't get crushed. My body's flat across the middle. The creeper's flat, you know, eighth inch thick, touching the cement. But I was able to, because I'm totally, you know, scared, I reached back, I grabbed the bottom of that chrome bumper, and I dragged myself out. Because I was so terrified the jack was going to slip. And for some reason, I just felt like I had to get off from underneath that truck. But I was able to drag myself out just far enough, you know, kind of like doing a pull-up, because it was just back behind my head that far. And I was able to drag myself out just to know that, like, my shoulders and head are sticking out from underneath the front bumper of the truck. The rest of my body is still underneath the truck. If it were to slip off the jack, the axle is going to fall across my legs. The front bumper is going to go across my chest, like, and decapitate me, right? I mean, that's how far I was able to get myself out.
Were you putting yourself in that position in case it happened again so it would be swift and an ending? Or were you just, was your only thought, just let me get the hell out from underneath this truck?
My only thought was get me out from underneath this truck. And I if I would have been able to get myself completely out, you could sure bet I would have, but I couldn't do it as far as I could get myself. And that's where I just like petered out. And my body started to shake really bad. I was, you know, started shaking. And you know what? The first responder, I mean, this is in a rural area of Wisconsin where it's a volunteer fire department. And the first responder that got there, the very first guy, was there within minutes. And the reason why is because he was on his way home from work, and he happened to be driving by, you know, in this rural remote spot. He just happened to be close by, and he, like, wheels in there within minutes. So everything is crushed, spleen, pancreas, intestines. Everything across the middle and all the arteries and veins, everything has been crushed. And like we talked about, now that the axle is lifted off of me, now I'm able to free bleed. So these five places that major arteries are completely severed, I'm pumping my blood out into my abdomen, all the veins, pumping my blood out into my abdomen. I'm bleeding to death at this point. The guy gets there, they ask me a couple questions. The second responder gets there. They're asking me some questions. They're talking to me. And I mean, I remember when the guy first got there, the very, very first one, and he looked underneath the truck, and he saw that my body was flat across the middle. I mean, his head was like 6 inches from my head, and he looked underneath there and saw that flat spot, and the guy turned away like he was going to puke, which was, for me, it was terrifying, because, I mean, this is like the Calvary, and you want the guy to, you know, he's going to come save you.
Right.
When he sees that I'm flat, he, like, turned his head away and made this, like that noise. I'm like, oh, man, you know. I'm screwed now, right? I mean,
right. Well, yeah. Here's your chance at help, and he's giving you this look of this is it. This guy's done for.
Exactly.
Bruce Vanetta is our guest this evening. We're hearing one of the most horrific accidents I've ever heard. Somebody still conscious and aware during this, when over 10 to 12,000 pounds of machinery has fallen on him, effectively severing him in half, crushing part of his body down to about an inch high to an inch and a half on the other side. And just an astounding experience of trying to save himself, pulling himself out. There are rescue attempts on the way coming to try to help him. We'll find out more about what happened with our guest. We'll hear about his out-of-body experience, near-death experience, and angel encounters. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. How do you feel about miracles? Do you believe in angels? Have you ever had divine intervention in your own life? We'll take your phone calls in the last hour of tonight's show. If you have questions for our guest or want to relate your own stories, that'd be the time to do it. Our guest this evening, Bruce Van Natta, talking to us about one of the most dramatic and traumatic experiences. I know I'm getting so many emails and Facebook comments and private messages telling me, oh my God, the graphic nature of the story. It's important to tell the graphic nature of the story so that you understand the true peril of what was going on with this man, what he was experiencing, because that is what leads to just how remarkable the miracle that follows truly is. This is one of the most horrific experiences and stories I've ever heard, but the outcome even more unbelievable and phenomenal. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. And if you've missed any part of tonight's show, don't worry about it. You can go over to coasttocoastam.com, become an insider. 15 cents a day is all you have to pay to get the best in overnight talk radio. Get access to over 5 years of past shows, live chats, news, and more. Become a Coast Insider right now at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, the story is just getting going. This man has been trapped under a truck. The first responders are starting to get there. His body and middle part of his body reduced to an inch and a half thick, severing most of the major arteries and internal organs. How can a man survive this kind of trauma? We'll find that out next on Coast to Coast AM. Bruce Van Natta is here to share his very unique story. And Bruce, I mean, to this point, hearing this story, I don't blame people wincing, listening to it in their cars or in their trucks, driving to drop off the loads or wherever they're off to or in their homes. The idea of this, as I said, you have to know the true peril involved in order to really appreciate the miracle that follows on this. Let's get back into the story. You're underneath the truck. You've pulled yourself as far as you can go. So your head and part of your shoulders are out from underneath the truck at this point. The first responder has shown up, seen the damage, and has had a violently ill reaction to this. You realize just how bad the situation is getting. What happens next?
Well, they were trying to communicate with me, asking me some questions, so forth. I'm at this point reduced to basically mumbling, and things just started getting fuzzy, cloudy for me, and I realize I'm just getting weaker and weaker. And all of a sudden, this sounds strange, but I actually heard my heart stop. And you know, we don't think about it, but we've had this heartbeat going in our back of our head since we've been in our mother's womb. Sometimes if you maybe run, exert yourself, and you can actually hear that thump in your ear. But for it to stop, it was strange because you never experienced that ever, right? And so I literally heard my heart stop.
Well, you were in a unique position of kind of being severed in half, compressed in half. So the blood pressure in the upper is much different than the lower. So I would guess, everybody has probably had that experience where they kind of hear that.
Yeah,
and when
yeah.
you're in a stressful position or even wounded, I can only imagine how much more that would be amplified to you, being that you're kind of severed in half at this point.
So when that beat stopped, my head slumped to the right side, my eyes closed, and at that point my spirit left my body and went up on the roof of the garage. You know, people talk about it, near-death experience, out-of-body experience. I've done some research on it since having my own, experience with it. And what I found in the studies, they say that right now in the world today, there's 8 to 10, depending on which study you believe, which one you read, 8 to 10 million people who have experienced a near-death or out-of-body experience at the point of a death. You know, when their heart stops, I know it doesn't matter, heart attack, stroke, drowning, car accident, whatever, before somebody does CPR, before somebody puts defibs on them and zaps them back to life and their spirit leaves their body. And for me, I mean, I know that's what I experienced. My spirit left my body, went up on the roof of the ceiling, and I just watched from above, just like watching a movie at this point.
Just now, when you say you've left your body, are you able to see in an ethereal form? Do you see your arms or your legs, or are you more like you're just watching through a closed circuit TV of what's going on at this point?
It was just like watching. I couldn't, when I couldn't see my arms or my legs, like as far as in spirit, up in the ceiling, you know, 15 feet. It was like just watching a movie screen. I mean, I was there, just like you or I would be watching, you know, through a window, or whatever. I'm just watching it all happen below me, just like, you know, watching it unfold.
All right, you've got this story unfolding. Now, here's an interesting angle. As you're up there looking down, witnessing what's going on, consciously, you don't realize that's you down there, do you?
You know, I was in such peace. Words can't describe how good I felt. I mean, it literally felt, you know, Dave, it was awesome. And I'm looking forward to experiencing that again at some point, you know, when it's finally done for me. It just felt amazing. I can't even describe how good it felt. And I'm just watching from above, totally carefree, totally at peace, no pain. Looking down, I can see, you know, there's this guy that's, you know, obviously hurt down underneath that truck. I'm listening to all the conversations. More people are coming, you know, the volunteer fire department guys are showing up. And the very first image that's just burned in my memory, the guy that I've been working with, I've known him since I was very young. And, you know, the guy's older than me, and, you know, we had a good relationship, and he had jacked up that truck, and he had not used any, you know, jack stands or safety equipment. He's on his knees, running his fingers through my hair, and he's crying. He's apologizing. I'm listening to every word he's saying. You know, he's saying stuff like, I'm sorry. I'm such an old fool. I should be the one that's dead, not you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, and I'm just watching it all happen from above, and I could care less. I'm just, you know.
Now, is there any connection to the physical form at this point? As this gentleman stroking your hair, can you physically feel anything?
Oh, no, not at all. I didn't even realize that poor slob crushed underneath the truck was me.
Right.
You know, I didn't completely disconnected from it. I'm just watching it all happen from above, listening to the conversations. And that's when it's like when you watch a movie and the camera pans out and you realize there's things in the peripheral that you didn't see before. That's
right.
Exactly the sensation I had at this point when I see that there are two huge angels on each side of my body, on each side of Leonard. And Leonard is like 6'1", 6'2", on his knees, and these angels are on their knees just like he is. So if you can picture the front of this truck, so it was a conventional. It had a, you know, a hood, a long nose. The hood is shut. He's just, my shoulders and head are sticking out from underneath the front bumper. He's running his fingers through my ear. He's on his knees, just right over the top of me. The emergency workers, you know, I've, at this point, no heartbeat, no pulse. They didn't do any CPR. I've got broken ribs. They're not going to do any compressions on my chest. No defib, no nothing. I've died, and, you know, there's nothing they can do. And but on each side of me are these two huge angels, and their heads stuck up like 2 feet taller than his head. So they would have been at least 8 feet tall based off of Leonard. They would have been at least 8 feet tall if they'd been standing. Long hair that went down to like to the middle of their back. These bright, white, shining robes that were like emanating light. You know, there's been a bunch of reenactments of my accident done. It'd been Hollywood. Sid Roth did one, you know, Angels Among Us, Country Music Television, History Channel. You know, Discovery Channel's in the middle of doing right now. All these big shows have done these reenactments, and none of them have got it right yet as far as the angel goes, the angels, because they always make the angels kind of look fuzzy or cloudy, kind of like you could see through them. But my viewpoint in the ceiling, looking down on it, if you can picture, these angels are right up against the front of this truck. They got their hands in the middle of my body in that channel where I'm crushed flat. One, you know, the guy from the driver's side, the angel from the driver's side, hands down in the middle, I'm crushed flat. The one from the passenger side, same thing. You know, and they were just as real as that truck, as Leonard, as anything else in that shop, as the volunteer fire department. You know, they were solid real. They were emanating light. And, you know, they had this, like I said, long hair, big muscles. The robes were made out of this weird material that I've never seen in clothing before. The best way I can describe it appeared to be woven out of like miniature rope. I guess that's the best way I can describe it. It looked, you know, like miniature ropes woven together, big thick cords like that. It was
like braided cord
material, you know.
Okay.
And they didn't move. They never talked to me. They never talked to each other. They just had their hands in the middle of my body where I'm flat. And unfortunately, I never got to see their faces because they were face down over my body. And my spirit's up in the ceiling watching from above. And,
while you're doing that, Bruce, you say that they're angels. Were you cognizant at that moment that what you were witnessing were angels? Or was this something that upon consciousness later, you discerned for yourself that that must be what you were dealing with.
No, I knew somehow instinctively, I knew immediately that those were angels. I just knew that they were angels. They had been sent to help that guy down there that I didn't know was me. And I was just watching him do it. And it didn't even, what's really strange to me, I guess, is it didn't even seem like that big of a deal at the time. It just seemed somehow normal or natural as I looked down from above. It wasn't like, oh my God, look, there's angels down there. That wasn't like it at all. It's just like, oh, you know, look, those angels are down there to help that guy. You know, like no big deal, like normal, run of the mill. I mean, it was very, you know, and I didn't even realize that until later, looking back, thinking about that experience, how it seemed so normal and natural as I'd look from above.
So you've got these two burly angels that are down there. Wings, halos, sounds of choirs, anything like that?
No, they didn't have wings at all. And, you know, I've been researching angels, and I went to the Bible to research. And what I found was there's about 300 times angels are mentioned in the Bible. And sometimes they have wings, and sometimes they don't. And these angels did not have wings, just great big dudes with big, you know, big muscles, biceps, triceps. I could see their back muscles were big, wedge-shaped body, broad shoulder, narrow waist. There was a belt, you know, right about where their hair ended. The belt was where on the robe, you know, and you know, a narrow waist, and just, you know, they were just solid, you know, like matching bookends, hands them on my body. And the emergency, what's, you know, I didn't even think about this until later. Somebody asked me a question. They said, well, you looked down and you saw these angels and they looked solid and real to you. Did other people see them in the room? And, you know, I've talked to the people who are there. Nobody else saw them. And so somebody else says, well, if they didn't see them, but you did, and they're so big and they're on each side of your body, were they moving through them? And I had to sit and think about that, you know, as to what they were, you know, that actual question, because I hadn't contemplated it. But somehow, for some reason, those angels must have commanded such a presence. They had such a presence in the spirit realm that people were not moving through them. It was like they were working around them. Nobody moved through them. It was like those angels had their space and the people were working around them, you know, as I watched from above.
Now, you could hear this man as he was stroking your hair,
yeah,
begging for forgiveness and apologizing. You could hear his voice. Did the angels communicate with one another, or were they speaking to you at all?
Not at all. They never said a word. I never, you know, no communication between them. They never turned around and acknowledged me up in the ceiling. There was no communication at all. Just, you know, just their presence there, or looking down, seeing them, seeing their hands in the middle, right where it was flat, you know, the channel across my...
Could you tell what they were doing with their hands down there, or were you just seeing that they had their hands near the injury zone?
They had it right in that channel. So okay. I don't know what they were doing. They weren't moving their hands either. It was just right. They were holding them still, and it took up that whole channel. I mean, they had their hands right there. And I'm listening to other conversations too. I mean, the people, the volunteer fire department, they just keep coming and coming. And so 10 people came to the scene of the accident from this volunteer fire department. 8 of them came in the front door of this shop, this garage. The last 2 people that got there came in the back door. Now, that sounds, you know, strange, or maybe, you know, just a little insignificant detail, but really it is a big detail. And the reason why is this. My body is laying underneath the truck, no heartbeat, no pulse of any kind. It's been that way for several minutes. And a year later, when I got out of the hospital, and I went and, you know, met with this volunteer fire department to tell them thank you. It was kind of a surprise meeting for them. They didn't know I was going to show up at their monthly meeting. And there was a group of 30 of them there that night. And I was able to go around a year later after the accident. I was able to go around this group of 30 and point out 8 of the 10 people that had come to the scene of the accident. And 2 of those 8 were the 2 people that had come in the back door, this lady named Shannon Celia, red-haired gal, and this other guy. And I pointed at them. I said, now, you guys came in the back door, and I was watching from above, you know, 15 feet in the air. You 2 came in the back door. Everybody else came in the front door in front of the whole group. I asked them why. Why did you come in the back when everybody else came in the front? And it was a simple reason. They had missed the first driveway, driven around to the back, caught a secondary gravel driveway that came up to the back of the shop, and they walked in the back. Now, what that little detail does, Dave, is it proves that I really was having an out-of-body experience. Because, you know, like I was on the History Channel, and they had this show called Miracles Decoded, and they go through and they try to disprove what people call miracles, and they get some expert on there saying, well, you know, Bruce Vanetta's out-of-body experience was really, you know, he comes up with some mumbo-jumbo and saying there's no such thing as a spirit because he doesn't, you know, he's an atheist, doesn't believe in God. So he said he couldn't have had a real out-of-body experience. He just perceived that. But what's so false about that thinking is there's so many people that have had out-of-body experiences that see something that they would have no way to see other than that their body, that their spirit was out of their body, just like me.
Right. And it's not like you were telling them from the perspective of laying underneath the truck and you notice the redhead walk in from the corner. You were seeing it from an above overhead perspective, giving you a totally different vantage point. So they can't even say, well, you thought you were unconscious, but you were technically conscious and your brain was still receiving information from your optical nerves, because that wasn't the case. You were seeing it from a totally different view and vantage point than laying there staring up at this accident.
Where I couldn't even see, and I can't even see that back door laying underneath the front of that truck where I was. I wouldn't have been able to see the back door.
Right.
So I couldn't have seen it. That's the whole point. You know, it proves I really was up in the scene. It's a little detail, but, you know, it does prove it.
All right, so you've got this going. We've got about three and a half, 4 minutes left in this segment. It gets very intriguing now. This woman does something that everybody else has pretty much given up on. You've heard them say, he's dead, he's gone, there's nothing we can do. What does this woman do that's different than every other responder?
She's just come out of the scene. She's one of the last two people to get there. She doesn't really know what's going on, right? She just rushes in. She comes up the driver's side of the truck. She gets down between the angels. So she's now where Leonard was. She's literally between the angels, and she's feeling for a pulse. I'm watching her do it, you know, again, from the ceiling, from my vantage point up in the sky there. I'm just watching it happen. She's feeling around, and she turns to two guys who are standing on her left, the passenger side of the truck, and she's asking them questions, and they're saying, no, it's two ladies passed. And she's feeling around, and she turns to the right, and she says, what is the guy's name? And they've said, Bruce Vanetta. And she begins to pat me in the face and say, Bruce Vanetta, open your eyes. And she's patting me in the face, a gentle slap on my cheek, louder and louder. Bruce Vanetta, open your eyes. And for some reason, up in the ceiling, that name, like, began to draw me in. And I didn't know it was my name. I mean, but there was something familiar about it. It just began to, like, draw me in. Now I'm watching intently and from the spirit up in the ceiling. And she's getting louder and louder and patting me in the face, saying, Bruce Vanetta, open your eyes. And all of a sudden, my spirit goes, bam, back into my body, seemed like through the head. My heart starts, my eyes pop open, and I'm looking at this woman eye to eye, bam, right there she is, right in front of my face. And the first thing that hits me is like this intense, intense, crazy pain, because up in the ceiling, I had no pain at all. But now I'm back in my body, got this insane pain, and it was just like, oh, and this is not the exact word, but oh, crap, I'm the guy underneath the truck. And it all came back instantly. The truck falling on me, I mean, it was instantly back into my memory. I remember being up on the ceiling, watching from above. I remember the angels. I look on my left, I look on my right, right where I knew those angels had just been. Couldn't see them at all. Nothing there, just the woman. And I'm just looking at her. I'm totally panicking, totally freaking out. And this pain is, you know, now it's super exaggerated because I just felt peace. And I just felt how, you know, complete release and no pain up in the ceiling. Now I'm back in my body, and just the pain was insane.
And that's an important lesson. If we have doctors, first responders, police officers, firemen, anybody listening, EMTs, so many of these people talk about the consciousness. And I mean, there was just a story of the guy that woke up out of a 17-year coma who was aware and could hear everything people were saying around them. Be positive. Be upbeat. Talk to them. And there are these stories that are coming out where there are nurses that are holding the hands of patients during very risky surgeries. They are saying prayers or holding their hands and talking to them and remaining positive and walking this person subconsciously or consciously through what they're doing. And they're getting better results. So please be cognizant of the fact, do not talk negative or talk down to the person in this place, because, you could hear them all saying, yeah, you're done.
Absolutely.
But she was cognizant enough of the fact that you were who you were and that she drew upon your name. She called upon you directly, reconnecting the consciousness with this energy above you, bringing you back into your body. And this starts to form a cohesive bond again. You begin to realize that this is you and that you are the one in this position. We have to take our top of the hour break. The story still has more to share. Plus, we're going to hear about other angelic encounters where angels save people's lives. Bruce Vanetta is our guest this evening. We've got so much more to share, and we'll open up phone calls in the fourth hour for you to call in and share your encounters, your questions, thoughts, and theories. We'll do that next here on the Best in Overnight Talk Radio. I'm your host, and this is Coast to Coast AM.